Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
I tell you this, the student loan, whatever this is that they're trying, that he's pushing again. This is the third installment of this. And it's the third installment of it. And I saw this morning, his tweet about this, where he said that he was, you know, this is the third, it's more student loan debt forgiveness is how he put it. It's student loan debt forgiveness. And the way that he was writing about it, it was like it was a gift to him that, from him that nobody, it just, the money comes from the ether, like nobody pays for it. And he's like, it's a big deal. Biden's new student loan forgiveness plan could erase up to $20,000 in interest for millions of borrowers. And he's like, it's a big deal. So my question is, because it's tax season, you know, it's tax season, it's tax month. It's the month that I hate more than, I'm in a horrible mood this whole month. Why? I mean, if people don't have to pay loans that they willingly sign for, then why should any of us consent to income theft or forceful taxation, which is the same thing, to subsidize this welfare scheme? Because it's a welfare scheme. That's what this is. It's welfare. And I'm so infuriated. I don't know. People are like, well, it would be forgiveness for the student loan interest. Like, I have people telling me this. Who do you think pays for this? Who pays for this? Who pays for it? Right? Well, it's people who, I actually had someone say this. Julie, it would be forgiveness for the student loan interest. Who pays for it? Right? Who pays for it? If you're not paying for it, then don't take out the damn loan. You're grifting welfare ass. Don't take out the damn loan. Otherwise, I'm going to claim all y'all on my taxes. I'm so tired of this. There is such an economic illiteracy in this country. The people who are like, well, it's just for the interest. I don't care what it's for. You shouldn't have taken the loan. Well, it's not my fault that, yes, actually it is. Who did you vote for? Who have you been voting for? Who do you sit here and tweet for? Who do you tweet for? Democrats. Guess what Democrats did? They nationalized student loans. They literally took the entire student loan industry and they took it over. So everybody who been voting Democrat, y'all voted for that. You voted literally to help increase the cost of college. You sanctioned it. You voted for it. Don't you be turning around and asking all of us to then pay for it. I get so aggravated about this. Like, well, Dina, it's just, you know, people have been faithfully, and, you know, they've been faithfully doing this, etc. They've been paying for their, that's, again, not my problem. Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. We are at the top of this first hour. And this is, as I put in the Substack newsletter, if you get that, the Substack newsletter that goes chapter and verse that goes out every morning. You guys get all of that. I get so aggravated about this because some of us work really, really hard. We work really hard. I don't think people understand who don't work hard, how hard people who work hard work. And then to be told that we owe it to someone to pay off their debts, then you're going to have to pay off my mortgage. I don't have any other debt. That's the thing. If I don't have the cash for it, I don't buy it. I don't have credit card debt. I do not have credit card debt. The literal only debt I have is and the only reason I haven't paid my mortgage off is for tax purposes, for tax cut purposes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have any debt. If I don't have cash for it, I don't purchase it. I have my savings. I do exactly what I'm supposed to do. I put money back every month. If I do not have money for it, I don't pay for it. That's for anything. If it's a vacation, if it's a trip, if it's an item that, you know, it's just like a discretionary item I want to buy, whatever it is, I don't buy it. I do not believe in accruing debt. I think it's irresponsible. Sometimes you have to when you have this government that we have. The inflation period, the inflationary period that is not transitory. But at the same time, I don't, as someone who went to college, and I reject this whole argument from people when they act as though times are so different. Like, I'm barely a Gen Xer. My husband and I argue this all the time because he tries to gatekeep for Gen X. And he argues and he's like, you're just an old millennial. I'll cut you in your sleep. That ain't going to happen. That's the quickest way to die. That is the quickest way to ensure your death, is to say something dumb like that to me. You ain't the gatekeeper for that. It's not like the olden days, guys. The college was still super expensive. It was super expensive because we live in a society that's snotty and they look down on, you know, blue collar jobs. That's the way it is. But now you have so many options. There are so many options. You have trade schools. You have all kinds of schools that you can go into. But people are conditioned to think that they have to go particularly to super fancy Ivy League universities and pay an exorbitant amount of money. And then they come out with like a degree in women's studies or some stupid nonsense. And you don't have to do that. Now, there's certain things I think you should go to college for. If you're going into like law, if you're going into medicine, if you're going into, you know, a field that actually requires that kind of that context in terms of learning, then yeah, I think that there are some instances where college is beneficial. But people think that it's like the next step in school or the next step in adulthood. And that's not necessarily true. What a lot of people honestly use it for is status. They use it for status. They use it for status and they use it to have their kids network and then their kids network with people and their socioeconomic group. And that's ultimately like literally the top reason why people do it. That's it. I God's honest truth. That's why people do it. And you all know it's true. And then they accrue all of this, you know, all of this debt. It's not my responsibility to pay for it. It's not your responsibility to pay for it either. And this idea that somehow it's owed or it's forgiveness, it's, you know, we're all paying for it. I went and I went through college, and if I couldn't do it, then I didn't pay for it. And I barely scraped by. I worked two jobs. You know, I started in the service industry, very humble beginning. And I worked my way up. And people act like you don't have those same opportunities. It's not a question of whether or not you have the opportunity. It's a question of whether you want to get off your ass and work. I'm quite honestly, I think that there's a major problem with some Gen Z today, particularly, and that they don't want to work. Not all, but I've seen it firsthand. There are some people who just don't want to work. They don't want to put the time in. There are people in their younger millennials too that are like this. I was talking to a friend of mine who is like 2 years younger than me, and she's considered a millennial, although she rages and she says she's Gen X, and I gatekeep and I say, no, you're not. But she runs an office setting, right? I'm not going to get too specific about it because it'll give it away right away. But when they brought in, she's not responsible for the hiring, but she's responsible for, you know, I mean, she runs a particular department. And so she'll get people in. She said that she got an older Gen Z person, and then she got a millennial, like a young millennial in. And immediately they were like, with the days off and how many breaks and what do we get? And I cannot believe I really have to work till 5 o'clock. I have to work till 5 o'clock. I have to get in at 7:45, 8 o'clock, and I have to work till five. They were shocked. Shocked. Like, they didn't think that that's how the real world worked. Everyone thinks that they're like these influencer hours that you just show up and you work whenever you want to. And that's not the case. And she's at her wit's end. And if she assigns tasks, she says, of everyone, these two individuals, she's like, the older millennials, it's not that big of a deal. She was like, but the younger millennials and the old Gen Z, she's like, these two people just have an episode every single time, you know, when I'm assigning tasks to be completed, when there are projects that need to be done. She's like, and heaven forbid if there's overtime. Should they act like overtime is some sort of, you know, labor abuse? It's weird. I think that there's like a generational difference because people think that they watch social media and they think that everybody keeps these influencer hours, and they don't. Not everyone can be an influencer. It's oversaturated already. There are people who are like, yeah, I want to be an Instagram influencer. I don't get the people who go, I want to go into politics. Have you met these people? I run into this all the time in my industry, and it boggles my mind, quite frankly. I meet so many young people that say, oh yeah, we're going to get a degree in this. We're going into politics. And I'm like, what do you mean you're going into politics? Well, I'm going to into being a politician. I actually had someone say that exact sentence to me. You're going into being a politician? So you just want to be on the government teat, but you're acting like it's virtuous because it's an elected office then, right? You're just basically going to be on the government dole. You're going to be a dependent of the taxpayer, but you're acting like it's virtuous because it's an elected office. And then you're acting like there's an additional level of virtue because you want it, because you're a Republican. So you think that inoculates you from ridicule. The parents weren't that big of a fan of me after that, by the way. I should disclose it. It was at a meet and greet. Kane's just so happy with us. It was at a meet and greet. And I had someone tell me that. And I'm like, okay, rude awakening here. I'm going to just be honest with you. What you see is what you get with me. I'm not going to sit here and kiss your ass just because we meet in person. It's just not the way it is. To the horror of all my syndicators and sales department and everything else. What you see is what you get. I'm the realest person on air. And I looked at this person and I'm like, you're going into being a politician. Did I get that right? And they go, yeah. And I said, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So can I be frank with you? I'm like, clearly you guys know me well enough. And I was like, and mom and dad, clearly you know me well enough. I'm like, politics is a consequence of living. Right? Elected government and the responsibilities of government, that's a consequence of people who are productive and contribute to society. In the very beginning, in the founding of this country, you had business owners and farmers and bankers and everybody else and all of these people who got together and they were contributing something positive to society. And it was considered a burden, much like jury duty, then they would serve a couple of years in elected office and it was a hardship on them. And then they came back and they went back to their work. Nowadays, people skip the whole, I'm going to contribute to society, and they go right for the teat. They go right for elected office. I go, pray tell, what are you bringing to this? What are you bringing to politics that you want to go into? Are you bringing your business acumen? Are you bringing your understanding of agriculture and the way that trade works? Are you bringing your understanding of monetary policy? Like, what actual skill are you bringing other than coming from wealthy parents who are paying for you to get a degree so that you can skip all the hard work and go right into being an elected official? And they just looked at me like stunned. They were stunned. I guess they thought I was going to applaud it and be like, yay. No, I'm not going to. I think it's the stupidest thing ever. And I think if you're a parent that's telling your child to grow up and be a politician, you're an abusive moron and you should be barred from having more children. That's stupid. You're adding people to the government teat. It's ridiculous. So I don't know. I don't know what ended up happening to that individual. I wouldn't vote for anybody like that. What are you bringing to the table? That's let's just get into all of it because it's a rainy day here in Texas. That's like what I get from these like red pill non-trad influencers. They're always single and childless and they want to lecture you about how to raise kids and successful marriages. But my whole point in that is we have a wrong perspective, a jacked up perspective at looking at higher education, and Joe Biden's feeding all into it. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the fight in the House because Mike Johnson is getting a lot of criticism. It's veteran owned, veteran run. And they hire veterans and active duty, and they also support our first responders, serving premium coffee to people who love America. So unlike a lot of I'm going to tell you, I really think that there's like this effort to go after Black Rifle Coffee from like the Starbucks and all of that out there, because Black Rifle Coffee is mainstreaming two things. They're mainstreaming, you know, support of USA, American pride, but they're also mainstreaming Second Amendment stuff. I mean, it's literally called Black Rifle Coffee, and they just happen to make amazing coffee because it's a bunch of dorks who love coffee. I mean, I love all of them, you know, I don't use it as a pejorative, but they're really bougie about their coffee without the bougie prices. I mean, these are excellently roasted coffee beans. They get the best beans. They bring them to the U.S. of A. And they roast them for, what, 5-6 days a week at their facilities in Utah and in Tennessee. And then they ship it right to your door. And if you're a member of the coffee club, you get free shipping. So you can pick your roast, your frequency of shipment, and it shows up at your door so you never run out of coffee. And they have ground, whole bean, K-cups, ready to drink, every type of coffee and way to ingest it, they have it. And they have, I mean, just again, amazing roast profiles. They also have like the grinders and the mugs and the kettles, everything you need for a great, perfect brew. So try for yourself today. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Order today and get 20% off using code Dana. You won't get that anywhere else. 20% code Dana at BlackRifleCoffee.com. Sign up for the coffee club today. Save some money.
American jobs are good, bad, and ugly. Don't look at that headline number that the politicians are spewing on TV. Although more Americans are employed, they're all working for the government. Even worse, most of them are part-time employees.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Let's see here. Sorry, I got hammered with a bunch of emails, right? We're like in text, right, when the show's starting. But we got our headline segment. So first and foremost, like I said, we're going to talk about this House fight over FISA because that's part of it. The House is looking and they're going to be debating all of the FISA stuff coming up. And we're going to deep dive on that. If you looked at the sun, apparently, why did you do that? And your eyes are probably damaged. So I saw this on X last night that apparently searches for why do my eyes hurt so bad? I looked at the eclipse. They increased like 300%. Adults are aging faster and facing a higher risk of cancer, but it's not the vaccine. That's according to a new study posted by MSN. No, we are not dangerously close to the next pandemic. Stop with the bird flu. And people born after 1965 are likely to have a more advanced biological age. It's very interesting. Stick with us. Our partners for this portion of our program, our friends at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service that's out there. And I know a lot of people say, well, I don't like to use this. I'm not going to use this service because they support, you know, leftist issues or this. If you say that, but you haven't switched your cell phone service, you probably are either unaware, maybe you don't care how much your cell phone service, if it's not Patriot Mobile, how much money they're actually donating to the issues that you vote against. DEI, Second Amendment abridgments, all of that stuff. Abortion on demand, taxpayer funded. They're donating lots of money to those issues to advocate for those issues and get those passed. So this is why you need to make the switch, because your cell phone, think about how much you use your cell phone for. Not just getting it on Facebook or X or social media. I use it really. I do a lot of work on my cell phone. And I mean, goodness, you can use it as a remote. You can use it all kinds of stuff. So this is why you need to switch. Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative wireless provider for 10 years now. I've never, ever in my life had an issue with the service. I have traveled halfway around the globe, never had an interruption, never had an issue. I'm like in Italy, never having an issue. I'm on a boat somewhere out in the Atlantic, never having an issue. That's how great Patriot Mobile is. So you need to switch. And when you do switch, first off, they have a plan that you can afford. They have tailor-made plans for you. Big family, small family, singles, businesses of all sizes. Keep your phone, keep your number, or you can upgrade. The choice is entirely yours. They have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team, so it's going to make it easy to switch. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana because that gets you free activation. Make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT.
Looking for the drive-through version of the Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from the Dana Show.
I would love to have abortion on every state ballot in America. This is an opportunity for us to be heard. Now, the states that it's on, New York State, we're protected here in the state of New York. I'm the first female governor of New York. I'm the first governor of New York who's actually been pregnant, someone who didn't even know I was pregnant for the first few months. So this 6 week is absurd. But down.
Okay, I got a question that. First off, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. That's Kathy Hochul, who's talking about a 6 week abortion ban. Democrats are so desperately trying to get Republicans on this, and Republicans aren't playing ball. So now they're mad. Kathy Hochul's like, I didn't even know I was pregnant for the first few months. I don't get that. I mean, understand that everyone else, everybody has different issues, but if Flo ain't coming every month, then something's up. Do I need to send you a copy of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Blume to have that explained to you? I'm just curious. I mean, where does this come off at? A 6-week abortion ban is absurd. You do know, as a woman who's also, I can't stand this, as a governor, the only one who's ever been, shut up. It's a biological function. I celebrate life, but this idea that you're just trying to get any win that you can, stop. I can't, I don't, it just aggravates me. But this is all in response to this abortion strategy that Democrats now have because they're just very, you know, it's fascinating because the way that Democrats have been reacting to it, they're acting like we're going back to back alleys. I mean, if you listen to their rhetoric, it's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Just stop. No one's saying this stuff. No one's talking about that. And the national issue was solved with Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. Now, a couple of things on this, because there's like two, there's the first issue, because the abortion, I'm looking at all the headlines I have on this. You got this in your newsletter. There's a lot of them. Because Lindsey Graham is now kind of into it with Donald Trump on it, and the Republicans are kind of going back and forth. I don't know. So Trump had said that it should be a states' rights issue and that Republicans also must win elections. Graham broke with him on it. And now and Mike Pence is mad, and he came out with his thing. Mike Pence, who the only time that he ever grew a spine and started arguing was when he was out of elected office. I mean, no offense, but that's the truth. I mean, am I supposed to lie about that? Are we all supposed to lie and be unchristian by saying that, you know, the opposite is true? I'm just curious. But, I'm writing more about this later over at Chapter and Verse, my Substack. So Trump had said that it should be a states' rights issue. And I want to talk about the messaging on that a little, because the messaging is just bad. But Lindsey Graham yesterday, he came out and he had said that this runs contrary to he said, I respectfully disagree with Trump's statement that it's a states' rights issue. And he said that it's about the well-being of the unborn child, not geography. That's all well and good. And again, I'm going to say this, and this is the only other time I'm going to say this. Discussing a difference in strategy is not a compromise on life, especially when it's a victory by incrementalism. You're looking at two different things here that the right is arguing about. Is it an all or nothing approach, or is it an incrementalist approach? And being an incrementalist approach and getting more victories does not mean that you are any less committed to life than you are if you are all or nothing and you win and you lose like it's your job. That does not mean that you're any less committed to life. And I question the faith, the character, the motive, and the kindness and spirit of people who argue otherwise. And I will get nasty with those people because I can't stand it. I just stop gatekeeping. There's different strategies here. Is the point winning? Is the point winning to protect life? Because if it's not, then get out of the way. You're a turd in the punch bowl of this conversation. That's it. But it's like people are trying to, on the right, are trying to do this petty ones up upsmanship. And I can't wait until that era of politics is over, by the way. It's annoying, and it's setting us back in terms of winning by years. Now, the announcement itself it sucked. Trump's announcement sucked. His messaging sucked. Be honest. I don't care. Be honest about it. Saying things like abortion rights, that's not a real thing. Saying, going out and saying, well, it's the will of the people. You are begging to get attacked by other people on the right when you say stuff like that. You don't say, well, because then this is what they're going to respond with. Well, you're telling us that life is just left to the will of the people, that you're voting on life. That's not what you're doing, but that's what you're inviting by having reckless, sloppy messaging. And it was sloppy messaging, period. Now, I get it. Abortion's not a big thing with him. He's been a moderate on it, but he's administrated conservatively on it. Those two things are true. He was there with Roe v. Wade. I mean, the judicial announcement, the judicial appointments that he made helped shepherd that through. And the irony is that you couldn't have had it without Mitch McConnell. I don't know. It's the craziest thing. But the messaging on this, and I think it was smart that he's trying to get ahead of it before this problem becomes too big for Republicans. And I think that the position that he's taking, and he's, this is what triangulation is. If you want a classic lesson on what triangulation is, this is it. You're recognizing the strengths of two approaches while positioning yourself above both. That this is classic triangulation. And this is the right way to do it. The reality of the situation is you live in a country where people are like, okay, 15 weeks, that's our general consensus. I get it that there are people, and as somebody defines themselves as pro-life, I get it. There are people out there who want all or nothing approach. That's fine. You're not going to win that way, but I understand that that's the position that you want to have. I understand too that there are people out there who like states' rights and they want to be able to do the state by state and incrementalist approach. It doesn't mean that they want to kill babies. It doesn't mean that they love babies any less than the people who want an all or nothing approach love babies. It means that they have a different approach to going out and saving babies, and they think that this is the strongest one, both politically and legally. So his messaging got in the way. Not too much in the way, but in the way a little bit. And then you have Lindsey Graham, who goes and argues a straw man. He goes, I'm going to continue to advocate there should be a national standard. Now, I understand the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's in our Declaration of Independence, and you can't pursue happiness and do all this other stuff without a right to life. I understand that. I believe in choice before conception. That's not what the current law is. So you're working to change the current law, not operate under a fictitious version of what you think is the law. Okay? We don't, remember, just we operate in a scientific world. We have to be very logical and pragmatic about some of this stuff, particularly if you want to win. What you want the law to be doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it is. So you have to work to change that. And you don't work to change it by operating outside of it. So what Lindsey Graham is advocating for also is a gift to Democrats, because you have a country that still believes in that 15-week limitation. And that's obviously more than the 6-week limitation and more than what some others want. So you got to start, and you got to do it step by step by step by step. If saving some babies is better than saving no babies, then I'll take saving some babies for right now so I can save some more babies in the future and then save some more babies after that. And then you had Mike Pence come out. Oh, Mike Pence is mad. He came out and he slammed it. He said it was a slap in the face. He has not endorsed Trump in 2020. He came out and said in a post on X, he said, too many people are ready to wash their hands of the battle for life. That does not, I feel like that's a straw man statement, because you're presupposing that that's exactly what someone is. He said that, he goes, the Trump-Pence administration helps send Roe v. Wade to the ash heap of history. I like how he puts his name on there, because he was pretty much as quiet as a church mouse throughout the whole thing. He says, pro-life Americans will never relent, et cetera, et cetera. I don't feel like his what he's doing, I don't think it's helpful here right now. I don't think it's helpful. You're not going to be able to change the country by changing the perspective of a politician. You have to change the perspective of the people who elect the politician, because the politician is representative of the people. It is an avatar of everything that they think. You're going about this just completely backwards if you think that you're going to reprogram the entire populace's perspective by getting one politician to agree with you. Doesn't work that way. And so I think that Republicans also have to win elections. And I think that was that was the best part of what he was saying. And in order to save life, you have to also win elections. You have to. I've written about this before and over at Substack. And like I said, I have another piece coming out about this too, because this, it is about strategy. And when you look at, and it's a post that I wrote about a year or so ago, what Trump gets wrong about the abortion fight. And again, I was kind of touching on his messaging here. the Dobbs versus Jackson women's health case that undid Roe. Roe was based on whether or not something was a private decision, and it was completely wrongly enacted in the first place. It was wrongly determined, wrongly decided. It was just ridiculous reasoning and a stretch of reality and law in order to even codify it like this. Even Ginsburg didn't support it. But I wrote about this. You know, you either believe in life or you don't. And if you believe in life, then you're going to want to work to save it as much as possible. Republicans, if you look at the last several elections that they've had, Democrats mopped the floor with them. And abortion played a part, and part of it is because Republicans' messaging is bad. In Wisconsin, in Virginia, and some of these other elections where abortion came up, Republicans just did not perform well. Then you look at places like Georgia and Florida, and you can't say that those are reliable red states because Florida literally was a swing state until two elections ago. So you can't really say that. And there's still a lot of purple areas in Florida. It's just that the messaging is smart in Florida. And Georgia, while a little redder, still isn't totally a red state. It still can be up for grabs. That's been proven in recent elections, too. But it's about the messaging. I think that the Republicans in those states have a little bit better idea than some of these other Republicans that are running their mouths about it. And maybe some of these states where they've had the floor mop with themselves, maybe those parties should reach out to these other state parties and say, explain to us what worked for you and how we can recreate that here. Instead of screeching about what the president is doing, this is the first step that Trump has taken to protect down ticket races. And I want to encourage more of that, because his tenure in the White House, if elected, will be meaningless if he loses the House and keeps this and the Senate in Democrat hands. He won't be able to accomplish anything. He'll be a lame duck. You will not be winning on anything, particularly life. So by him taking this out of the national ballpark and putting it in this and keeping it in the states, it puts more work on Democrats, and they don't like more work. And it also protects a lot of down ballot races, because you need those people if you want an agenda on life. So like I said, I think this is the first step that he's the first thing I've ever seen him do to actually protect a lot of these down ballot races. And that's a good thing. But the messaging has got to improve, guys.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Provide unique light and energy so that you have the energy of the moon at night. And sometimes you've heard the word full moon. And sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that?
I love science with Sheila Jackson Lee. You know, the moon's more manageable. Can we send her there? It sounds like she's volunteering. Ooh, I love that idea. Let's send her there without like a suit or anything. Let's just shoot her up there into the
That'd be two gas
sky.
Giants.
She can walk around, collect moon rocks.
Two gas giants meeting.
Right? Golly, it's impossible to. I'm reading the. It's impossible to go near the sun, but the moon is more manageable. It's made up of mostly gases. It's not, but
she's a representative from Houston.
Mm-hmm. People vote for her like a lot. She's yeah. been in that job. How long she's? Hang on.
Gosh, I want to say at least a decade and a half.
Oh, I'm sure it's like longer than that. How much you want to bet? I bet she's been there forever because she's like ancient years old. Oh my gosh. I was in high school when she assumed what? Office. Dude.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I was in high school when she assumed office. Oh, man. I mean, not like I'm ancient, but I mean, that was a little bit ago. Holy cow. She has been in government forever. I mean... forever.
So like two or three decades? Good God.
Yeah, 10 years, Kane. She's been there for 10 years. That's right. That's crazy.
The math doesn't seem to work.
Who votes for her that long? Like, what do you get out of it? Like, I always wonder this, especially when I look at my hometown of St. Louis. First Congressional District, which is what they redistricted us into after they got rid of the third district, which was right when I moved. First District, they've had Democrats for forever. And you don't got nothing in First District. You don't got no jobs. You don't got no tax breaks. You don't got no incentivization to create more businesses. You don't have any of it. None of it. It's wild. None of it. But they keep voting Democrats. They keep voting for the same Democrats to do the same things over and over again. It's stunning to me. But that's how they do. That's what they do. We have coming up, we've been breaking down some of these fights. We also have this fight happening in the House with over FISA, etc. Thomas Massie's been ringing the bell on that because it is incredibly troubling for sure. We're also going to talk to you later on in the program. Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne will join the show. She's out of Texas. And some culture stuff as well we're going to get into. And then, of course, well, we've got a lot. I mean, we're going to get into some of the DEI and the CRT and the ABC and the BBQ and all of that good stuff. All the letters. We got all the letters for you. Coming up, our second hour on the way. Don't go anywhere. Stick with us. It's our friends over at ReadyWise because you want to be ready. You never know when you're going to need it. And that's the thing. You always want to be prepared. And it's important to be prepared. I mean, you could have, you know, a sudden storm, a power outage. We are in spring season. So it's tornado season, as you know. But if you want to hike, if you want to go on a hunting trip, there's all kinds of uses for ReadyWise. And you know that you're getting delicious premium food packed at their state-of-the-art plant right here in the U.S. of A. So you're supporting American agriculture, American meat, and American jobs. Each of their packages, like they have their emergency 1 month supply, 2 bucket bundle, 36 pouches of premium survival food. They know what you need in order to keep, you know, powered out throughout your day. 2000 plus calories, 50 plus grams of protein. So you're maintaining muscle, but you're also getting the energy, the carbohydrates that you need to be powered and, you know, get what you need done throughout the day. Freeze dried, dehydrated, no refrigeration required. Easy to prepare, just add water. 25-year shelf life as well. It's the time to prepare is now. Visit ReadyWise.com and use code Dana20 to save 20% off of any regular priced item. That's ReadyWise.com, code Dana20.
What makes the administration so sure that you're not selling borrowers false hope for a second time here? How will this proposal pass legal muster when the first one didn't?
Yeah, first shout out to the Yukon Huskies. But look, as the president said yesterday, we're fixing a broken system. We're trying to provide a fair shot to Americans trying to access higher education. And we're doing that by addressing runaway interest. We know it's been out of control, the interest that people have to pay. We're going after those schools that are defrauding our borrowers. We're providing relief to those who have been paying for decades. We're providing relief to eligible public servants. And we're addressing hardship that many Americans face.
It's not you. They willingly entered into it. And this is, again, and it's a problem created by Democrats. That was Education Secretary Miguel Cardona.
Give a shout out to the UConn Huskies.
I mean, it just sounds so out of touch because the president has said, yeah, we're going to pay off more people's student loans. Welcome back to the show. Top of the second hour, because, you know, you've got money to spare. Why do you need to go on vacation or do any kind of home improvement? You just, you know. Give your money to the academic welfare. Super simple. That's all you got to do. You know, goodness.
I didn't vote for that.
Oh, well, Kane. Tough beans. You got to give your fair share, which is everything.
Well,
yeah.
What I'll be eating is tough beans.
Yeah, yeah. Dana Lash with you. Listen coast to coast. Find us on Channel 347 DirecTV. We're also on X, too. You can also stream us on X, YouTube, Facebook, everywhere. The problem with this, too, they made it even worse is because they went and they started comparing student loan forgiveness to the PPP loan from the pandemic. So Representative Andrew Clyde had tweeted, Joe Biden once again announces that he's going to transfer millions more in student debt. You know, he says it's a scam, which it is. And then the White House retweeted it and said Congressman Clyde had $156,697 of debt forgiven from a PPP loan. Well, that's not actually how it worked. It was a grant. And if it was a loan, And it was a grant because it's how the IRS also categorized it. And if it had been like the student debt loan forgiveness, then the IRS would have looked at it as income and he would have had to pay taxes on it. And that's why they literally, let me put this out. This is from the IRS. They actually had to pass an amendment on this. And this amendment had to clarify what was that the forgiveness was that expenses were deductible and that any kind of forgiveness wasn't an income. This was the Paycheck Protection Program loans are taxable. IRS advises that improperly forgiven PPP loans are taxable. You had to go by all of the guidance. It was a grant and you had to, you couldn't fire people. You couldn't add all these restrictions that went along with it. And you, and otherwise it had to be repaid in full. And they said they actually had to pass an amendment again to the PPP to clarify this. And it got into how loan recipients who receive forgiveness were qualified to use the proceeds properly to pay eligible expenses. It had to be work only, had to deal with salaries, etc. And they were investigated. They're actually, they've been collecting a lot of money from people who were, who did not follow protocol for the PPP grant. That's the thing. You can't compare both of that's stupid to you can't they're not the same thing. They're just literally not the same thing as all. They were. And the other point that I made too with this is that these were businesses that were forcibly closed under penalty of jail and their economic means were seized. When you're comparing that to willfully taking out a student loan, you are dumb. They are not even remotely the same thing. Not even remotely the same thing. Literally, the government made businesses shut down. The government barred businesses from operating. They barred people from working. They stopped people from generating an income. They stopped employers from opening their doors. They stopped employees from being able to generate money to pay their bills. That is incomparable to college students who take out loans willfully, voluntarily, fully aware of the risk in a completely not even remotely close to that scenario context. And you had to, the restrictions, and I'm pulling this up, were strict. Under the terms of the loan program for the Paycheck Protection, lenders could forgive the full amount of the loan if the loan recipient met three conditions. You had to be eligible to receive it, meaning it had to be a small business or an independent contractor, et cetera, et cetera. You had to be in business before February 15th of 2020. You had to have people who were paid for their services, et cetera. You had to be use the proceeds to pay for eligible expenses, payroll, rent, interest on the business mortgage, and utilities. And that was it. And then you had to apply for loan forgiveness. And then it could be, then if the above conditions were met, then and only then could the loan program, could that forgiven portion be excluded from income, meaning it wasn't considered taxable income. But they said if the conditions are not met, then the amount of the loan proceeds that were forgiven but do not meet the conditions, that has to be considered taxable income. So to compare this again to willfully taking out a student loan is the dumbest thing ever. These people have no idea what they're talking about, and it is embarrassing. Oh my gosh, I am cringing to death. How in the world are you in government and you're saying this stupid stuff? When I see stupid people on social media make this point, I cringe to death. How are you an adult, like functioning in this society, and you don't even know how this works? Oh my gosh, like go home and like give us time to pass over the cringe, please. Can you cringe to death? Because I feel like I am. Gosh. Entirely different things. And it's amazing that they are trying to pay this. Loans, you know, when you take out a loan, you do so, I mean, you know you're going to have to repay it. You're going to have to repay it. It's a loan. I mean, when you're a student and you're taking out a college loan, you know you're going to have to repay that. This is like the government was actually closing businesses. No one forced you to go to college. But the government was forcing people to shut their business. No one forced you to take these courses, but the government did force people to not work. So you see, they're not even remotely the same thing. It's so stupid. That's so stupid. I'm embarrassed for these people. Now, the forgiveness portion of it, again, it's how it was classified. I mean, I just can't even, golly, I can't even. And they even had like the forgiveness. When you look at the program, they had that provision for forgiveness actually written in. They just clarified what was already in existence. So that's why it's not a credible comparison also for the student loan thing. This is our government, you guys. It is our government. But again, the reason why, and I've written about this before, my friend Glenn Reynolds actually wrote a short book on the whole about how the government took over student loans and made it incredibly expensive. And they did so under the guise of making it more affordable, but it was never actually made more affordable. It's a scam. It's an absolute scam. The government has to be removed from that whole process of student loans altogether. And we have to actually go back to merit-based loan systems, because the way the math that they use in order to qualify for a loan now, it's crazy. Like, you can't, I mean, you wouldn't be able to go and take out a loan for a business, but you could go if you wanted to take out a six-figure loan for college and they'll just give it to you. It's insane. It's irresponsible, and they do it on purpose. And that's after the government took it over. Democrats took it over, and this is what they decided. This is what they decided. And they also, honestly, when you look at undergrad and grad school, when you look at borrowing, I think there has to be a limit on it, because the tuition rates for these universities, you're not getting the return on the money that you're putting into it. You're just not. There's a lot of things that we could do differently with regards to student loans, and we should be doing it differently. A couple of other things. Lorraine has a piece up. It's up at Substack now, and it's about the people of East Palestine, Ohio. Have you guys heard about this? This is one of the crazier stories. I feel so bad for these people in East Palestine. I really, really do. This first, it had to do with this report from the EPA. It was first reported by WTRF, and the federal officials were saying that the train derailment there did not qualify as a public health emergency. Yeah. And then they were also saying that, well, you know, the controlled burn of the toxic chemicals, you really didn't need to do that. I know. Yeah, you didn't. It was unnecessary. You guys didn't need to do it. So they apparently, the railroad company, they just thought it would be better to burn it all off, and that would be faster than like draining the cars and doing all this other stuff. That's what it sounded like. The EPA? And Norfolk Southern. They've been fighting the residents, according to Reuters, and losing suit after suit. So this piece that's up over at Chapter and Verse, it is the EPA is giving the people of East Palestine, Ohio, the shaft. Because you have health concern after health concern, and whenever residents bring the issue up, they're told, we can't connect this to the derailment, over and over again. And then you have the National Transportation Safety Board report that came out. And they were saying, yeah, there's no need to burn these chemicals off. They should not have ever had to do it in the first place, the railroad. And the information that was given to them at the time, apparently that was not told to any of the other officials on the ground. It just sounds like an absolute. This is insane. This story is crazy. And so now these people in this town are still dealing with all of these issues. The GAO, or the Government Accountability Project, they were saying that the EPA had the authority to declare the site a public health emergency, but they instead decided, and the quote was, literally, best not to get into this. That's, like, Lorraine has the email. Best not to get into this. I'm sorry, what? So they were trying to get ahead of it by saying they did not want to declare this area where you had this toxic derailment a health risk because they said, quote, the widespread health problems and ongoing chemical exposures haven't been documented. But then there were reports that said literally no government agency was actually testing residents' health. And that includes the CDC and the EPA. Even though they said that they would create a world, literal World War I chemical, a World War I era chemical by burning off that oxyvinyl chloride, they decided it's best not to get into this. When's the last time they tried to cover this? Oh, the Animas River, Colorado. Remember when the EPA was trying to cover that up?
Man.
Ooh.
Wait, what does EPA stand for again?
The Environmental Putz Agency.
Oh, then it's accurate.
Yes.
Because I thought it was a protection agency of some sort. It seems like they're almost intentionally doing these things.
Yes.
Like...
It does sound that way.
Do we need to fund the... I didn't vote for the EPA either.
I didn't vote for them either.
Why are
we
funding the EPA again?
What do they do?
I'm not sure.
I've hated the EPA since Ghostbusters.
Yeah. I haven't heard of anything that they've done...
That's how I learned how to hate the EPA. Well, they let all the ghosts loose.
Yeah. Have they done anything well?
Shut it down. They want to make sure that you're protected with whatever may happen with the economy and government spending. Adding gold and silver as a hedge against inflation is smart, and Gold Co. is the way to go. The gold IRA field is oversaturated, and it's very confusing to find a precious metals company that is trustworthy and that makes it, that prioritizes your education on the matter, really. And this is one of Gold Co.'s unique qualities. They are very thorough. They give you all the information you need in a one-of-a-kind gold IRA kit for individual buyers, and it explains to you the economy and how gold IRAs work. And they want to make it easy for you to get the benefit of owning physical gold and silver. It's a very important part, by the way, precious metals ownership, of your overall retirement and savings strategy. They're dedicated to transparency and honesty, unmatched customer service. Ask about their highest buyback guarantee and learn how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver. So get your free 2024 gold kit with Gold Co. today. Protect your family's financial future and freedom. Get started at danalikesgold.com. Your free gold kit from Gold Co. and learn how to get possibly $10,000 in bonus silver. danalikesgold.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently, let's see here. This, no, I put this in the wrong place. This is not the headline I didn't want here. Social order could collapse, apparently, according to in the AI area, according to two Japanese companies. So they're warning via the Wall Street Journal, one telecommunications company and a leading newspaper. They've issued a manifesto calling for new laws to restrain generative AI. It's Japan's largest telecoms company and their biggest newspaper. They said that they got to restrain this because democracy and social order could just collapse if AI is left unchecked. I mean, everybody's warning about this, and we're just still, like, hurtling through, like, going right for it. I don't know. There's a mystery as body parts, this is gross, are found strewn across Milwaukee in three separate instances in 1 week, including a leg. Fears have arisen that the remains may belong to a missing teenager. This is horrible. It's a grisly discovery that they first made on Saturday. And they said that they were just strewn across, you know, the whole city. It could be, they're saying they haven't confirmed one specific missing teen that they've been looking for, but they're investigating this. That's a horror film. They're investigating that. Parents are urged to buy dumb phones to protect children from social media. Kane wants to know why we don't go back to pagers.
Yeah, pagers and payphones.
What about the old-time phones where you couldn't really do anything with them?
Yeah.
You couldn't text. All you could do is, like, type boobs with the numbers and show the screen upside down. That's all you could do.
As a phone.
Yeah, only as a phone. Pagers, though? Come on. Those are dumb. I don't like pagers. That's like, are you a 90s drug dealer? Like, those are doctors and 90s drug dealers.
That's not what they were only for.
Yeah, pretty much was.
Not really?
I don't know. It kind of was. Salvage crews have begun removing containers from the ship that ran into the Baltimore Key Bridge. That long process still. And cicadas. This is a disgusting headline. I'm going to save this one for next time. You're going to want the full hit of this. Stick with us.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It kept 225,000 child care workers, child care working centers open, giving parents an opportunity to get back to work. Well, I'll tell you what, you want to come make a speech or shush up, okay? I'm not messing around with him. He looks like he could take me. Ask me. Look.
What in the world? He's at, what did you say? He's in D.C.
Yeah.
They're, what is it?
Union Station.
Union Station in D.C.
Talking about the economy.
And he already threatened to fight a dude. Oh, don't say that he was joking, because you know he was serious. He was serious when he said it. Don't make Grandpa mad, man. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lashier with you. Bottom of this second hour.
I sure wish he'd quit making fun of his stutter.
And, you know, because that's what a stutter is. It's, you know, people want to fight each other. My favorite is when he got in an argument with that guy at the plant, and he got all up into his face. Or the other time when he got into the face of the other guy who challenged him. This was during 2020. Challenged him at a town hall. I mean, there's a lot of video of him. It's a wonder he didn't get his ass beat.
Look here,
at some
fat.
Point. Yeah, like he is so combative. He's always been like that. Like that's who the real Biden is. If you go and look at video of like old timey video of Biden before he had his clearly catastrophic stroke, he was a jerk. He was such a jerk. Always has been. Just an absolute jerk. You can kind of see why his kids are the way they are. Because he was like that dad who, I'm the star here. See, this family's about me, see? He's like that guy. This is wild. But he's speaking about the economy, and apparently people are not, they're not happy with what he's saying. So, yeah, I don't know how. Now, in the meantime, we got to talk about what's happening in the House. The House of Representatives. So they have an insane amount of out-of-control spending that they are not apparently able to keep in check. The appropriations bills that are driving spending, they originate in the Appropriations Committee, and apparently Republicans are expected to elect a new chair of the Appropriations Committee this week. And they have, because Kay Granger was chair, she's stepping down. They said that that's like the number one thing they have to do. I don't know. Like who, they need somebody that is going to kind of, they need somebody to control this stuff. Because the spending is, you've had stopgap measure after stopgap measure, spending the authorization of $1.2 trillion in spending. It's bad. Out of control debt. It's awful. And then on top of it, now you've got this, from Politico, Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson's staff, told a group of Republicans yesterday that he opposes the warrant requirement amendment at the center of this week's 702 debate. Now, he has not taken a position publicly on this, apparently, according to Politico. And this has been a big debate with the FISA Act, right? And apparently now he opposes requiring the FBI and other agencies to get a warrant when they use FISA. Now, this is how this would come into play. This process has already been abused. Go back to 2016 with Trump and golly, the handful of people that were working on his campaign. And during that whole process, that's when you had, and there are receipts that show this, and you even had the Clinton campaign that was fined for not listing this or properly reporting this as a campaign expenditure. So they ran afoul of FEC and they had to pay a fine for this. But you had the Clinton campaign working in conjunction, sharing the cost with the DNC. They hired a law firm called Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie then engaged this third-party entity, a firm called Fusion GPS. And Fusion GPS is basically like an oppo firm. I mean, their biggest, project at that time was lobbying for Russian oligarchs. You had this piece of this proposal, this that became law. Then it was called the Magnitsky Act, and it had to do with this guy who blew the whistle on this, all kinds of economic, like money laundering, embezzlement, and everything else that these Russians were doing. And they killed this guy, this Magnitsky guy, and in his name, they had passed and they passed this act, and it was sanctioning these oligarchs for breaking, you know, all kinds of laws to enrich themselves. And then when this guy blew the whistle on them, they killed him. So they sanctioned these oligarchs. Fusion GPS was hired literally to lobby on behalf of those same oligarchs to remove those sanctions. And the number one person that they had fronting that was this woman named Natalia Vedelitskaya. Now, her name may or may not sound familiar because she was the woman who tried to entrap Donald Trump Jr., in New York. Remember that whole conversation where she said she was going to meet with him to talk about, you know, a bunch of stuff, and including adoption. That was what she used to, you know, get her foot in the door. And he actually never took the meeting, but they lied and said otherwise, and all of the press ran with it. And not only did they lie and say otherwise, this is how they did it. They would send a lie to friendly reporters who were completely fine with writing Oppo as a regular story. Now, this actually happens on the conservative side of things, and I know people who've done it. So don't think that it happens more on the left. But I have seen some completely unethical people on the right. In fact, I've actually had professional disagreements with people before, because I had refused to allow my name to be used on Oppo that I didn't write and run as a story. So that's true. I've seen it happen. I've lived this. This is it happens more than you think. And they don't, they don't disclose it. But it happens way more on the left. In fact, that's where the right got the idea. So what they did is they would go to these friendly reporters and they would say, oh, I've got this, check this information out, with really minimal, if any, verification. And they would run this nonsense, and then they would run these stories, and then these stories were collected by the same people who seeded them and used as evidence or proof of wrongdoing by the people they were trying to smear. Oh, well, it was reported in the press, you know, and the press have such high standards, so it must be true because, you know, anything that's reported in the press is gospel truth. Well, that's what they used in order to get a warrant to spy on people in the Trump campaign through FISA, right? So it was the same Fusion GPS, and they were sending out, and we know some of the reporters, because a Freedom of Information Act request finally revealed some names, but the rest were blacked out. And a couple of people just volunteered that it was them, and they didn't feel any shame about it. So they would send this, it wasn't even Oppo. Oppo suggests that there's something in there that's real. This was just BS. They would send this stuff to these reporters. These reporters would write about it like it was a true story. And then Fusion GPS, because they had Nellie Oher, O-H-E-R, who works on their staff. Her husband, Bruce, was in the DOJ, right? Pretty high up within the DOJ. So Nellie Oher with Fusion GPS, they used her and her husband, and she would send this stuff. They'd get these reports, these articles. She would tell her husband about this, and then her husband and some in the FBI would take it to the FISA judge, because the FISA judge is supposed to look at the evidence. They're supposed to verify it, and then they consider whether or not they're going to, you know, issue this warrant. They didn't even follow that protocol. They're like, oh, wow, here's the evidence of these reported stories. So they granted a warrant based on that. So in some respects, you can argue that the safeguards that were supposed to be put in place to guard people from weaponizing this and using it against political opponents has already kind of been eroded. There was a judge who lost her job on the FISA court because of this. But at the same time, why would you want to make it easier by removing that? To my original point with Speaker Johnson here, if he opposes requiring the FBI and agencies to get a warrant if they're going to spy on Americans, that's insane and should be opposed at all cost. I mean, that's amazing to me. I don't even know how in the world that could be considered in any way legitimate. That's crazy. So that's the truth of it. That's one of the things that they're doing. That's the FISA fight that they're having. Good grief. I mean, maybe we could cut spending and maybe not make it easier to weaponize this system and spy on average everyday Americans, right? Here's another interesting story for you that I saw that came across today. This particular story, where's this at? I saw this, and I got to find it because I had it up. I saw this and I thought, oh, really? That's kind of unfortunate. Where's this at? It had to do with this. Do you guys remember one of the students from Parkland, that David Hogg guy, who some said wasn't even at the school that day, but has made it a career for himself by fundraising or doing whatever off of it? And apparently there were receipts with that too, which is kind of crazy. His PAC, I didn't even know he had a PAC. He has a political action committee. Jonathan Turley wrote about this. Jonathan Turley said the David Hogg group was hit with allegations over spending practices and policies. His Leaders We Deserve PAC, apparently he spent comparably, the PAC apparently spent little on actual candidates and spent the majority of their funds on travel and expenses. And the counsel that he has worked with him, Mark Elias, is a Clinton campaign, former Clinton campaign general counsel. And he created this group in 2022, and he wanted to elect young Democrat candidates. But the filings reportedly show that they raised about $3 million, but they only spent like a small portion of that on their stated mission. And then they spent like $1.4 million on payroll and consulting firms, travel and entertainment and meals. Wow. And of course, apparently Hogg himself got a paycheck out of it. He was getting a lot of money, several thousand a month off of it. That's crazy. So wait, isn't he the guy who tried to start a progressive pillow company?
Yes.
Oh, and that didn't really work out that well either, did it? No. Uh-uh. I mean, is anybody surprised about this, though? I'm not. I'm not surprised to see this at all. I mean, he's it's always only ever been a grift. One of my friends, Ryan Petty, got super mad at him, and he was like, stop using my daughter's death. Stop exploiting my daughter's death. That's what he told Hogg. And it did feel at the time like Hogg was really trying to hijack all of that for his own attention and his own momentum. It really did kind of seem that way. It was really weird to watch that, to watch all the machination with that and people trying to exploit that for some sort of like, oh, I'm going to start my career or kickstart something. It was just wild.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
This is a crazy story. So a Florida woman was attacked. She went to the hospital. She was attacked by a belligerent raccoon, Kane.
Oh.
In a scene that a neighbor described as something out of a horror movie, the attack occurred St. Augustine, Monday night. The 75-year-old Florida woman and her pet dog were chased into their own home, and they were trapped inside for an hour and a half by the belligerent raccoon. According to neighbor and friend John Ness, who helped fight off the raccoon, he said raccoon was, quote, big and powerful. Definitely something that I have never seen before. She's 75 years old. It bit at her ankles. She got bites on her foot. She was left bleeding. The neighbor spotted the raccoon around 8 p.m. loitering on her porch. And before the raccoon made a beeline inside somehow, where he then mauled the homeowner and her dog. Ness heard the woman's screams and he ran over to help. But the chubby raccoon, who tipped the scales at 30 pounds, was in no mood to leave. Ness recalled, quote, we couldn't get him out and he was on top of me.
What?
And at one point, apparently, he was able to grab a butcher knife. I had to double check. This was Ness, the neighbor, and not the raccoon. And repeatedly stabbed the raccoon with it. He goes, I actually used the knife when he was on me to stab it continuously until he got off of me, his direct quote. But even after being repeatedly stabbed, the belligerent, combative raccoon kept lunging at Ness, so Ness stabbed him a couple more times. Then Ness called 911, and Florida Fish and Wildlife responded, and they carried off the crazed critter, and they dispatched it with one shot.
It still wasn't dead.
It wasn't dead. It's a badass raccoon. The homeowner was taken to the hospital, treated for animal bites, screened for rabies. She's since been discharged. Her dog had been vaccinated against rabies, did not require medical attention. Okay, I got to ask a question. Because this Ness guy, you know, he looks like he works out. He doesn't look like a schlub, you know. It's a 30-pound raccoon. Okay, my Frenchie weighed a little more than 30 pounds. Both of them. How do you not get it off you? It's still small enough. My youngest son has a rule. If it's smaller than you, you can kick it. It is kickable.
That's a rule. That's a law. That's a thing.
That's science. Yep. It's kickable. This thing was yeetable. I love the way that the neighbor describes it, because he's like, the raccoon was on top of me, like they were trading punches, like it was UFC, right? And he somehow managed to get a hold of a butcher knife. I don't know where she keeps her knives, you know, like, were they on the floor? Like, what was happening here?
More effort to stab it.
Yes. He stabbed this thing multiple times, and it still was attacking him? Oh, man. That's the Florida story of all Florida stories so far this year. Stick with us. We have a whole other hour on the way.
For the United States of America, there is nothing beyond our capacity. Nothing. If we do it together...
What was that?
Bird flu. There's a song that sounds like that.
Oh my gosh. I said on break, he sounds like a rager from Dark Tide, but that's like deep dive. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you.
Capacity. Nothing.
Just give me the call. Right on that mic there. Get it.
Instead of beeping curse words, we should just lay that cough over the top of all the curse words.
I like that, actually. That's a idea. Great idea. Instead of having, you know, can you believe it?
What a piece of...
What a piece of...
Literal cough button.
Oh, wow. Top of this third hour, Dana Lash, with you. You can listen coast to coast. And, X, we're everywhere on all of the streaming platforms. We're all there. We're everywhere. And Channel 347 Direct TV. So Kane sent me this story, and I had some stuff I was going to talk about in this segment, but now this is completely hot, just attention jacked the whole segment. Now you sent me this yesterday. We had a headline on, or no, day before, right? Monday
it
on
was,
jeans.
No, it was yesterday that we talked about it. We saw it over the weekend, though.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about jeans and how it made me think of it with the concept of talking about the Cold War and Ukraine going into NATO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And how jeans became like the symbol, well, they were the symbol of freedom and capitalism. And North Korea has this old BBC, this gardening program where they blur the dude's pants out because he's in jeans, and they don't allow jeans in North Korea. It's true. You can only get one of several haircuts if you live there as well. I know it's, but now they say that wearing jeans, first they said jeans and hoodies could help tackle climate change. That was in 2014. And now they say wearing jeans is bad for the environment. That's the new thing. And they said, I do want to know who, because the other one that I had said like 2-something miles. So this article said a study revealed wearing one pair is the equivalent of driving for like over 6 miles. Who sits down there and figures that out? I want to drag them behind my car. Sits down and does this? Well, let's see. Figuring out my pair of pants is equal to how much driving. What a weird measure. Kane, how much driving is your pants equal to?
6.6 miles.
I don't know what the hell I'm wearing. I don't know what I'm wearing. I'm wearing something.
Because aren't jeans made from cotton?
Yeah, my pants are made from cotton.
So is it cotton?
I'm in brown, which is when Goth discovered color.
Or are they trying to argue that the machinery that actually make the jeans are the ones that are causing...
Well, what about the child labor in the underdeveloped countries where they outsource all the making of their jeans now? Yeah. I mean, you know, oh, that's right. That doesn't count. That pollution doesn't count if it's in, you know, if it's over, it's in Asia. That's white privilege. The pollution counts less when Chinese kids and Uyghurs that are imprisoned make the product. Did you know this?
I didn't.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, if you're mining over here, like, say you're going and you're digging for cobalt, right? You can't do that really here because, you know, bad for the environment and stuff. And, you know, the labor, you gotta, ugh. But if you are in Asia or if you are a black child in the Democratic Republic of Congo, it doesn't count as much. Because the white people that drive all the products that are powered by cobalt don't see it. You see how that works? The white progressives don't see it because they don't see the abuse of, which would count for over here, minority labor. They don't really see that, so it doesn't count, right? Nothing says racist white privilege like progressives acting like the pollution doesn't occur because it's in a country where they can't see it. Wow. That's true, though. That's how they look at it. Well, there's no pollution here. I just don't see it. Everything is nice and pristine. Meanwhile, in China, they literally have cancer lakes. Like, they call them cancer lakes. Everybody that lives by there dies. They're like pink. Google it. For real. Yeah. They don't care about the environment over there. You think China cares about the environment? No. No. But hey, it's not here. So it doesn't count, right? It's in China. It's in a place I've never heard of before. It's all the way over there. So it doesn't matter. So now they were saying that in 2014 less energy was wasted if people wear casual clothing. I felt like they were trying to tell everybody to dress like schlubs, right?
Well, they didn't have to say anything about that in the 90s.
I just want to know where they get the arbitrary. It's like driving a car for 6 miles. Well, if you wear leather pants, how many? Oh.
That's like riding a cow for a half mile.
Right? It's like driving 5 cars at once.
A gassy cow.
This is wild. It doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense. So, I don't know. I'm amazed. So now it's bad for the environment. They can't really. It's like how eggs are bad for your cholesterol, but they're good. But then they're bad again. But they're good. I don't know. What are they?
They're good.
Are they good for it again?
They've always been good.
Well, I know they have been. But like, what is it now? What does the Ministry of BS say now?
I think the narrative has changed since we've seen a lot of these carnivore and keto diets pop up. I think that eggs have. I think the bashing of eggs has subsided a bit.
I'm just saying, you know. So that's what they were trying to. That's what they were pushing. So now jeans are bad. The most iconic piece of freedom in culture is bad now. Bad to wear. I think there's been an agenda for a long time to try to push you to what Carol Roth has said. You know, you will own nothing and you will be happy. I feel like there's been I think I've told you guys about this before. Like the whole, do you guys know that whole tiny house thing? Can I just be honest? The whole shabby chic thing and the everything white palette and the tiny house movement are all to make you have no color, boring, dirty old stuff in tiny spaces. That's what it is. Shiplap everything. Just saying. I don't know. I get real weird with that stuff. Right? It's just weird. Like the tiny house thing. Did I tell you the one episode I watched where these people, they didn't have no land. They had no land. And they spent, I don't even know how you can spend. It was like $200,000 on basically an outhouse on wheels with a tiny little space for a bed. And they kept going, well, we love the fixtures. I'm like, you cannot even lay down in it. You love the fixtures. You basically take a deuce right next to where you sit and you eat your meals.
Yeah, or cook the meals.
Yeah. Like, literally, you're dropping a deuce on the other side of your stove. That's weird, man. That's weird, right? Right?
Yeah, no matter what the context.
And then they all, and they, I look at them, and they had a cat, too. Of course they did. They, he was like an underwater basket weaver, and she braided toe hair. I don't know. And they both made $1 million. I don't know. And they had a cat, and they wanted, they sold their yuppie apartment. I think that, of course, I think they lived in New York or some urban major city. And they didn't even have any land. They're like, well, now we've got to figure out where to put our, we got to figure out where to put our house. It's not a house. It was a glorified outhouse with a bed area and a tiny little stove on wheels. And they made a big deal about the paint and look at the flooring. And all she kept going on about the fixtures and it's so well appointed. And I'm just cannot get over it. I can't, you can't even do, couldn't even do laundry. And I'm like, where are you going to go do your laundry? If they have friends over, if they entertain, they all have to sit outside because they all can't fit in their little outhouse on wheels. They all got to sit outside, right? On property they don't own because they didn't even think about the land part of it. That's wild. You can tell that people are, in some respects, they just have no idea about property ownership. Well, we want, we have an idea for our house. You got to have land first. What? Well, where are you going to put it? It can't just float in the air. Where are you going to put it at? Oh my gosh, bro, I couldn't get over this. Hang on. There, they had a whole, I stopped watching it. Because it's, I first I made fun of it. Yeah, they call it, yeah, they have tiny house hunters and they call tiny house big living.
Is it big?
What?
Is it big living?
It's a damn dollhouse.
Is it big living?
It's not big living. It is a literal dollhouse. They're dollhouses. If I ever saw one of these driving down the road, I would die of laughter. I would wreck my car because I would have just seized and died of laughter watching it roll down. And these people, it's not that they're broke or they're struggling or they can't afford anything else. This is how they virtue signal. I actually was only able to watch like two episodes and I could not anymore. I just couldn't. Like when they were, I watched this one lady. Oh my gosh. I watched this one episode, right? I could go on about it. She spent like $500 on the faucet. And it was one of those big, curvy, like professional chef. Five, and that's like on the cheaper side, isn't it? I think for those big, giant old faucets. Actually, it was like over $500 on her faucet. But I kid you not, hands to sky, she was balking over how much they needed for their little mobile, their version of a sewer system. She couldn't wrap her brain around that. She just, guys, she could not wrap her brain around it. She's like, but I, $500-something on this faucet seems like a good idea for my shack. It seems like a good idea. What am I going to do with my dookie? I don't know. That's, she could not figure it out. And I'm watching this and I'm like, this is the country. This is the country right now. This is us. Right?
They're old enough to vote.
Oh my gosh. No, Kane, I swear she was like our late 30s.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Like this guy, they talk about this artist. He doesn't just make tiny houses. He creates micro masterpieces. Shut up. You're a damn dumpster diver. Shut up. I hate this whole movement. Hate. I also don't like the all white palette. I feel like it's anti everything. It's anti tradition. Guys, here's an idea. Let's have everything be grayish. What? Imagine the color of depressing, and then I want you to make that your home. What?
All 125 square feet.
Yeah, all 5 square feet of it. Grayish. Mm-hmm. Just everything, just imagine, everything the same color, right?
Those houses are built out of shiplap.
I just, or the whole shabby chic thing, the men out there are like, I don't even know what that is. Don't ask your wives about it because you'll never get away from that conversation. Just trust me on this. That's where they had this lady designer take things that were ratty and tattered and like, oh, this is character. It's like how when people say something, like when they say something is rustic, it's just crappy. Rustic is fancy for crappy. I don't know if you guys knew that or not, right? That's what that means.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So there's a Arizona Supreme Court story from Arizona. They just upheld a 160-year-old law regarding abortion. They said that it goes into effect, it will go into effect in 14 days. It's kind of similar to some of the other ones passed. It was a 4-2 decision. They said that it's when they make narrow exceptions to save the life of a mother. They have, every state has exemptions where it concerns rape and incest, etc. This one, that's very interesting that that was upheld in Arizona, of all places, because I always thought Arizona was just a little bit, maybe more to the left on that. A porch package dressed as a thief, dressed as a trash bag to steal. A porch package, like an actual.
Did you see that video?
Yes, an actual trash bag. They actually dressed as a trash bag. This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And were able to steal these packages. And also, they were obscuring their identity. You couldn't see who it was. You couldn't see.
Garbage ghillie suit.
Yeah, they walked up. You know how, like, you see on Warner Brothers when, like, Bugs Bunny or somebody would be a shrub and they'd, like, walk up. And then the trash bag would walk up and then absorb the package and then walk away. That's one way of doing it, I guess. That's really wild. So you got to watch out for your stuff out there. This, apparently, it's the more expensive to die in California than it is in any other state. Really. One of the states. They said they had an actual funeral directors. It's the National Funeral Directors Association. They did. The average cost of a funeral in the U.S. is like $7,800. But the highest prices for the actual, I guess, the whole service are Hawaii, D.C., Massachusetts, and then California and New York. Those are the top five. Is anybody shocked that they're all blue states? In fact, all of the top 10 are blue states. Interesting. Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne is trying to poach New York's police for Texas. She joins us next to discuss. Stay with us.
Craving a daily dose of intellectual adrenaline? Look no further than the Dana Show podcast, where curiosity meets courage by following on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why can't you just change the locks?
Oh, I will be arrested instantly.
They turned off the hot water and then reported that they had no hot water. It's a $250 fine per day, up to $15,000, punishable by 5 years in jail.
So here you are. You have to pay the upkeep of the house.
Right.
Not getting any rent?
I'm not getting any rent, and I'm paying the gas and electric every month.
Four stories repeated over and over and over again by irate and often unwitting property owners. Worry lines marking their faces, who came to City Councilwoman Vicky Palladino's office desperately seeking help. Hong Chen has spent thousands trying unsuccessfully to get the squatters out of this home in Maspeth. John Sofran using
New York,
his pension money.
As we've talked about on the show, you got to pay the utility bills for squatters. You got to pay the light. You got to pay the heat. You got to pay the electric, all of that stuff. And if you turn it off, you get in trouble. That's just like one of the things that's going wrong with New York right now. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. We are at the bottom of this third hour. And tying into this, and this is all, we're all going to bring the tugboat to shore. This all ties it in. Keep that on the burner. You got this story, Salon, men punching random women in New York City, a desperate last gasp of the male rage fueling MAGA, M-A-G-A. What? So there's a lot of crime in New York, and there's a lot of squatting and people punching and everything else, but, you know, it's just MAGA. It's just the fault of it. It couldn't be because they're not allowing, I don't know, they're not enforcing laws or even allowing law enforcement to enforce said laws, which then brings me to this ad. Let me pull up this ad. That ran today, a full page ad in the New York Post, big New York publication. And it is from Texas Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne, who's telling law enforcement in New York, hey, come to Texas. We got some job openings here in Texas. We could use some police in Texas. She's poaching. She's going to go up there and poach New York's police. We could use them. Congresswoman Van Dyne joins us now via Skype. Good to see you. This is a full-page ad that ran in the New York Post. I'm sure I wouldn't be shocked if they got a ton of response off this, honestly.
I hope so. And it was hey, guess what? Y'all come to Texas because we see the way that you're being treated in New York, and it's disgraceful. You've got politicians that are not enforcing the laws, as you mentioned. They're not even allowing the citizens to protect themselves. They're going after people who are just trying to protect their homes or protect their property or protect others on a subway. They're going after them. But they're letting violent criminals out. They're letting the violent illegal immigrants that beat police officers midday. They're letting them out the next day. They are constantly talking about defunding the police and how horrible the police are. And my point is, if you put your head, you know, out there every day, you're putting your neck on the line. You don't know if you're going to come home. If you're a police officer, you've got no idea what you're going to be dealing with. You're doing that, and then you are getting thrown under the bus by the very representatives that claim to represent you. If you guys are having to put up with that, which we're seeing on a regular basis on TV, come to Texas, where we're going to revere you, where we have respect for our police officers, where we actually defend you, and we allow you to do your job, which is protecting citizens and enforcing laws. Come on down. We'd love to have you.
I love that. And you're right. I mean, this is, of course, coming right off of the funeral services of New York police officer Jonathan Diller. I mean, that's just heartbreaking to hear, you know, his family talk about his service to the community. And then ultimately, you know, he ends up being killed by the same lawlessness that that the politicians in New York are promoting. And he's just, I know there are several New York officers that have lost their lives like that. Whereas when you look how they're treated in New York compared to how, you know, officers seem to be treated in Texas, everybody, I mean, we get along with our law enforcement. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't, black, white, Asian in Texas, who isn't getting along with law enforcement. But it's also, I think, a culture of politicians do not bend that knee to that restorative justice, at least outside of Dallas County, I should say.
Well, let's not go too far south in Austin either at one point in time. But they're trying to make up for it now because they've seen what happens in these policies when you're not enforcing the laws. People want to have safe streets. They want to have a community that they feel like they can walk around in, that they can bring up a family, that their kids can go to school and not be attacked, where you can be a woman on the street and not be threatened by a random person punching you in the face. These are not long, you know, long drawn out bars that we have to cross.
Right.
This is, you know, just living in a civilization, living in a society. These are some of the rules that have been bent lately with excuse after excuse being made for criminals, where citizens aren't being protected, where their rights are being taken away and they're constantly being given to the criminals. And I don't know why they are doing this, but the fact is that New York seems to be the epicenter of it, where they are completely throwing their police officers under the bus. Hey, you're going to cowboy up and you're going to be a police officer. You deserve some respect. You deserve to be able to do your job, and you deserve not to be harassed and threatened with criminal action because you are enforcing laws that these lawmakers are putting on the books.
It seems like
we're reaching out. Does it seem to you like
they're setting them up to fail?
Yes, it absolutely does. They put their lives on the line. They arrest these criminals. And then the very next day, liberal DAs like the ones in New York let them out. They don't even allow the police officers, once they've done their job, to sleep peacefully because they know these same criminals are going to be out. And you're absolutely right. The murderer of Jonathan Diller, that is exactly what happened. This, you know, these people were arrested time and time again for violent offenses, and they were just let go. They were just let out. And, you know, I do not live in New York. I'm a Texan by choice. And one of the reasons why is because we actually have laws down here. We respect them. And as a result, we have low crime. And by the way, a higher quality of life for a much cheaper price tag.
Yeah, people understand, talking with Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne, represents Texas's 24th district. People understand, you know, there's going to be a consequence to breaking the law, or heaven forbid, squatting someone's house or punching someone in the face, you know, in Texas. It's amazing that anyone even would wear the badge anymore, considering the everything that they have to put up with. Not just, I mean, they're set up to fail, and then they have to bear the consequences, and sometimes fatally so, from the inaction of politicians. I mean, I would imagine that there's not a lot of people wanting to wear the badge in New York. I read just last year their numbers had decreased in terms of recruits by like over 1,200. I don't even know what that looks like this year.
And that's, by the way, that's around the country. It's in Texas as well. We host a job fair, one of the largest job fairs in the state. You know, we had nearly 16,000 people come last year to get a job. And we had a whole row of police departments, ARA police departments, that were looking to hire good people. You know, where they used to get hundreds of people that would apply for one job, they're now getting a lot less than that. And so they, too, are hungry for people to apply, and they need applicants. And so I'm not afraid to go outside the country. You know, people who've already put their life on the line in other states who don't feel like they're getting the respect that they need, come on down. You know, there's a reason why you're doing that job. There's a reason why you got called into, you know, life of law enforcement, and you deserve to be able to do that. And come to Texas, because we have a lot of jobs. We've got a great standard of living, and we are welcoming to you, as opposed to, you know, wanting to hold you accountable criminally, you know, for simply doing your job.
And I know with everything going on, especially with our southern border right now, talking about enforcement, I wanted to ask you about this as well, because I know there's a budget battle. There's always a funding battle in the House. And it seems like now, I think, what, this month, Republicans have what? It's in effect now with Gallagher retiring, plus one majority. So it's even tighter. It is. I don't know if it's ever been this tough for Republicans, because you're the power of the purse. You don't have that backup in the White House. You definitely don't have the Senate. It's super close in the Senate. We're in the middle of an election season. I know that some people in purple districts are very, very nervous about things. But at the same time, you know, you represent a district in Texas. You're looking at the southern border. You're seeing the deluge coming across that southern border, not just of bodies, but also of drugs, and how that's getting into the interior. What are you telling your fellow congressmen in D.C. as we are lurching towards this, you know, another battle over this? I know that the GOP is kind of fighting with itself, but what are you telling your
congressmen? It's a battle willing to have. It's a you know, a hill I'm willing to die on to make sure that we actually get some security on our border. And, you know, we talk about what's going on in these cities with these police officers. Well, you have sanctuary city policies, which do nothing more than incentivize folks to come here illegally and take advantage of those incentives. You know, we can't afford it. We're looking at it. We're adding $1 trillion every 90 to 100 days, another $1 trillion on top of an almost $35 trillion debt right now in our country. It is simply unsustainable. There's going to be a point in the next few years where we're paying more just to service our debt than we are on anything else. And you want to talk about a waste of money, and we cannot continue spending that. So, yeah, there was a number of Republicans that got back. We had, you know, our appropriations bills that just came through the last couple of weeks. I voted against them. And the reason why is not only were we increasing spending, normalizing the spending that we had during COVID, which was absolutely ridiculous, but we were not securing our border. And while the Biden administration wanted to add more money toward the border, they weren't changing the policies. It is the policies that have led to the complete disaster where we've had 10 to 11 million people illegally enter our country in the last 3.5 years that need to be changed. It needs to be changed back to the policies that were working under the Trump administration, whether or not that was the Remain in Mexico, whether or not that was continuing to build the wall and not allowing people who were here, you know, who are committing crimes, or allowing them to be not only detained, but then deported. You know, this administration's taken that off the table. They've taken the Remain in Mexico off the table. They've added the CBP app where people can just apply over their phones and get into our country. And they've had massive parole release. It was always supposed to be a one-on-one, case-by-case basis. Instead, what Secretary Mayorkas has done, which is one of the reasons why I voted to impeach, is he's allowing mass parolees to come into our streets. And by the way, that's one who happened to murder a 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia. This cannot be allowed to stand. And unless this Congress, unless this administration is willing to take that seriously, you know, we have the power of the purse, and I will continue to vote against those bills that do not address the border.
Last question for you, talking with Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne, my congresswoman as well, Texas 24th District. You talked about the power of the purse, the Appropriations Committee. I know with Kay Granger leaving, has anyone suggested Congresswoman Van Dyne as the chair of the Appropriations Committee?
I'm not on the Appropriations Committee. I'm on Ways and Means. We're 70% of our
You on Appropriations Committee, because I mean, unlike some of the Republicans in Congress, you actually understand economics. And I just feel Kane and I are both in agreement on this. I feel like that should be a thing, and maybe run Ways and Means, too. I don't know. All of them.
Well, I'm looking at tax policy right now. I'm looking at healthcare. I'm looking at trade, holding Mexico's feet to the fire as they continue not only letting people cross our border, looking at fentanyl that's killed over 110,000 people, but also the jobs that they're taking and how they are not abiding by our current trade agreements. Mm. Those are all things that we could use had we had a strong, you know, a chief in the White House. We could use that to force Mexico's hand to help us at the border and securing our border. But we obviously don't, which is why you've seen so much outbreak in there in foreign wars across the world, because we don't have a strong chief right now in the White House. And it's affecting not only, you know, other areas in the Middle East and Europe, over in Ukraine, potentially Taiwan, but it's hurting us right here as we're having numbers of military-aged men, single men, come in through our border that are on the terrorist watch list, that are with the CCP, and are here to cause harm. And it's not if, but when. And unfortunately, until we get a stronger person, you know, President Trump in November, somebody who will actually help our law enforcement and back them and support them. Until that happens, we're going to continue to see the lawlessness that has run rampant in the last 3.5 years.
And if, heaven forbid, there isn't a victory in November, y'all's job in Congress is going to get that much harder. I have never been less envious of a job in my whole life. Oh, my word. And well, I mean, you're in the right spot because you're a tough woman. So you're right where you need to be. Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne, we appreciate you fighting the good fight in D.C. We appreciate your voice. And thank you so much for supporting law enforcement. And I feel like we're going to get some good recruits out of this from New York. So
I love it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm in touch with the chiefs. I'm like, let me know. Awesome. Let me know when you get folks that are applying because we need them down here. You
awesome.
Take care. Thank you for all you do.
Yeah, we'll take them down here. We'll love them. Take them down here. Absolutely. Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. We'll talk with you again soon.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
I mean, it's just, and think of the things he says. Look at the way he talks about minority populations, Hispanics, you know, we're talking about them being, anyway, I can't think of any other time in my lifetime in history that's occurred that you've had somebody who's had this kind of attitude.
What is he talking about specifically? He's saying that's Joe Biden telling Univision, look at the way Trump talks about minority populations and Hispanics. What, like, how? Number one, how? That's the first thing that I thought of. And then the second thing, when he was discussing people crossing the border illegally, he was saying you can't vet everyone. I heard the whole speech that he gave because he did it. He gave it right after I was off air and I was in my office and I listened to the whole speech. And he was talking about, he actually did mention Hispanics that live near the border and how they're terrorized by illegal immigration and cartels. And then that's when he got into, you know, they're not sending us their best, talking about, you know, he's joking about what these other countries, because after he was trying to get help from Mexico's president at the time, and he was specifically talking about criminals that are hiding in the herds of people that are crossing into the United States. So you have people who commit the crime of crossing into the United States, and then you have criminals who commit another crime by crossing into the United States. Democrats know he was talking about that because that's a position that they used to previously have until it became advantageous for them not to, actually until they needed more votes. Now, have you noticed every single time Joe Biden gets in front of any kind of Latino, Hispanic voter, what does he talk about? Just like he only talks about abortion to the women, he talks about that to Hispanic populations. Is that not racist? Like, to me, that seems racist because I'm pretty sure that voters of all demos care about like jobs.
You mean, and, like, you know, if you don't vote for him, you're not black?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He doesn't
like
want
that.
His kids growing up in a racial jungle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And eulogizing that one grand lizard, yeah, whatever guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Mm. All right. We've got to get to stupid.
Yes. Today in stupidity.
We got so much of it today, but it's Sheila Jackson Lee. This is her claiming the moon is made of gas.
Provide unique light and energy so that you have the energy of the moon at night. Oh. And sometimes you've heard the word full moon.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is, yeah, that complete rounded circle.
Yeah.
Which is made up mostly of gases.
Oh, there it is.
It's not, though. Who's dumber, her or the guy who said Guam would tip over? Back with you tomorrow.